All right, any questions?
I had just a real unstable moment when I got angry about my mechanic charging me more than I needed to charge me. I just really had to sit with my emotions and figure out a way to express my anger gracefully. And as it turned out, it all sort of worked itself out by itself anyway. But there was a moment where I really feel like sometimes my emotional body pulls me off of what I know is a better or higher position to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep implementing the practice and it seems to get easier.
Yeah.
But it can really be a challenge when you're faced with it. And sometimes I'm at a loss as to where to go and not stay at that level and meet that person at that level and therefore keep repeating the same energy of duality.
That's a good question. We have trained ourselves to perceive everything the way we do. So the way we perceive everything is due to our own training in that perception. We have trained our perception to see the world in a certain way. So that's how we see the world. And even though it may seem all common and ordinary and everyday to us, what we've done is something far more than that, because by the way we perceive the world, we also perceive the nature of reality. So we're enacting a cosmology, in other words, the origin and structure of the universe, and a philosophy, the nature of existence, in each action. Now that's amazing, isn't it? This is what we're doing in every single action. We're enacting a cosmology and a philosophy. And so the cosmology that we enact is our identity. The cosmology and philosophy that we enact is our identity. We embody that as an identity. And for most of us, that identity is one of seeing our identity to be an accumulation of points of view. So we see our identity to be an accumulation of points of view that have accumulated from the moment we were born. We take the existence of this identity to begin at birth and to occur over a span of time and called life, and to end with death. And so when we see that our identity is an accumulation of points of view associated with a specific individual, in other words, us, whoever we might happen to be, then we feel necessarily trapped within that identity. That's all we see about ourselves. We see ourselves as born, living over a span of time, and then dying. And so when we see ourselves in this way, we lead a necessarily self-centered existence where we are constantly trying to substantialize this identity with additional points of view, or prove that this identity really is somebody by announcing our points of view to the world. This is who I am. So our primary strategy in living life is to identify ourselves with our points of view, and then to protect these points of view associated with our identity, and to compete with others according to what they're points of view are about themselves. So we say, these points of view are my identity, your points of view are your identity, this is who I am, I'm these points of view, this is who you are, you were those points of view, and I will always in some form or another either be protecting my points of view from your points of view, trying to enforce my points of view against your points of view, or compete with your points of view vis-a-vis my points of view. Now, this is a very simple way to understand ourselves, and all of us can recognize what I'm saying in themselves. You know, that it's very easy to see. Now, for most of us, we are born, we live our life, and then we die, never even knowing that we have the option of another identity. We do not know that we have the option of another identity. And this isn't another identity in that here is my identity of points of view, and then over there on the other side of the earth or off in another eon of time and another cosmos is my other identity. The other identity is always right here. And it's hidden from view as long as we don't know it's there. As long as we continue enacting our identity that we've trained ourselves to have, we never have any possibility whatsoever of enacting the identity that we have that's hidden from view. Now, the identity that's an accumulation of points of view is necessarily self-centered and fearful, due to its construct, and it sees everything in opposites. This is what duality means. And so the entire mythology of the cosmology and philosophy associated with that individualized identity is one of good versus evil. And so not only our individual identities, but all the myths that we have created, by and large, talk about this war of good versus evil. And we enact it on a grand scale within all of human society, and we enact it on a daily basis within ourselves, where, you know, let's get down to the person that we consider to be the most important on earth, ourselves. When it comes down to us, and according to this individualized identity, the war against if good and evil, this mythological war, is being enacted in every moment within ourselves. So all of these, all of our ancient myths, the Iliad, the Odyssey, every single one of them, the Holy Grail, up to those of the present, Star Wars, The Matrix, and others, they enact this forbidding landscape of good and evil. The landscapes depicted in myth, are these kinds of myths, are not a place most of us would want to live in. We wouldn't want to go live in the landscape of Star Wars or The Matrix. You know, it's really kind of a scary place to be. And so you see, but this is all what's going on inside us. These myths came from us. They are a depiction or a portrayal of the way we see ourselves. That's why we're able to depict them in film, because this is how human society sees itself. And so these epic struggles are always going on within us. And that, though, is only one kind of myth, you see. This is a pervasive myth, but it's only one kind of a myth. There is another kind of a myth. And whereas the myths I'm talking about are filled with the opposite of good and evil. And what they usually do is portray an untouchable or unreachable hero. In other words, there is an heroic figure, the protagonist, who is untouchable and unreachable. They may inspire us, but we, in our heart of hearts, feel that we could never emulate them. So we don't see ourselves becoming them in our ordinary life, whether whoever it is from throughout time, whether it's Robin Hood or whoever it might be, and let alone someone like Luke Skywalker or Neo. You know, these are not, we don't see ourselves becoming Luke Skywalker or Neo, running around being able to have mastery over all. And so you see, this is another way of positioning opposites. There is the great hero, and then there is the society full of failures. and the failures have no possibility whatsoever of being the great hero. Maybe once in a while someone might arise, but you know, who is going to arise to the stature of having a light-filled saber that puts all of the universe in its place? So you see, they always seem like they're very far away. And even though we go to the theater or we watch the screen of our TV or our iPod or our computer, and we feel captured and taken away from the reality we live in, and our disbelief is entirely suspended about the world we enter into, when we leave that setting, we feel uplifted. But it isn't anything permanent. It can't be, because it's an illusion. The war of good and evil is a complete illusion, whether it's within ourselves or outside ourselves. But the only thing we have to work with is ourselves. We're the only ones we have to work with. If we want to change our mythic import that we're putting out in books and films and other types of media, then we have to change ourselves. It's impossible to have films and books about the nature of reality that powerfully portray something else unless the writer of those has the instinctive realization that goes along with it. It's impossible for a writer to write about something that they themselves have not experienced. It's absolutely impossible. And so you see, when we say, well, how can I realize some kind of an identity that's hidden from view? It's something I don't know anything about. How will I get to know it? How will I get to know it's there? We have to realize that we're going beyond all these things that we've trained ourselves to believe. We've trained ourselves in certain points of view. We've trained ourselves in the war of good versus evil. We've trained ourselves to believe that certain of our emotions are good and others are bad. Certain of our thoughts are good and others are bad. And until we're able to go beyond the whole purview of good and evil, we can never possibly see that there is another identity, that is really our true identity, that is beyond good and evil. In other words, it's free of all descriptive frameworks. It's free of thought and reasoning. It's instinctive. It's truly instinctive to us, and it is our true initiation and empowerment. So the first moment that we take to rest as awareness, we begin to acquaint ourselves with that hidden identity. And this hidden identity, the one that's hidden from most of us, it is not a self-centered and fearful identity. It is an identity of complete wisdom and power. It is the instinctive nature of the universe. It's the instinctive nature of nature itself. It is the instinctive intelligence of nature. And so we have to realize from the beginning, when we take that first moment of restful awareness, that we're going beyond our entire way of perceiving everything, and we have to allow for that. We have to allow for the resolution of how we've trained ourselves to perceive the world. If we do not allow for that resolution of how we have perceived the world, we can't possibly get to know our new identity. So we allow for that how? Short moments repeated many times. Uncontrived short moments repeated many times. We don't try to prolong a period of restful awareness because that would be contrived. It would be the same old thing. Instead, we enter into a moment here and there as we remember to do so, and over a period of time, that moment becomes more and more obvious as all moments. And when do we do it? We do it in all circumstances. If it's the mechanic who's charged us too much, or it's our significant other doing the same old thing that pushes our buttons, or, you know, if we're in the workplace and everyone has their own points of view and it's a constant attempt to try to get everyone to calm down enough to work together. Whatever it is, that's our perfect opportunity to take a moment of rest. And as we do so, more and more we become the master of the illusion. So the master of an illusory world, the master of all perceptions. Because our perceptions can be anything we want them to be. Our points of view can be anything we want them to be. We have complete control over that. And the more we empower ourselves with awareness, the more we see that, the more we see that we really do have mastery over the illusory world. And the more we see that the world that we once took to be so real is actually a multidimensional reality that is ultimately non-dimensional and timeless. So what we perceive as a continuum of space and time is always pervaded by non-dimensionality and timelessness. But you see, we can't possibly understand that from a self-centered, fearful perspective. The only way we can capture it, so to speak, the only way we can capture the victory banner of that realm is short moments many times. That's the only way. And as we do so, we enter into an entirely new identity. And this identity, rather than being an individualized, separated body, this identity, its body is the all of all. Its body is nature's intelligence. And its mind is nature's intelligence. And its speech is nature's intelligence. So even though while we appear individually, our consummate or ultimate body is always nature itself. It's always nature's intelligence itself. We're never really made into anything, although we seem to be. Now, if we persist in only knowing our individual identity, then we'll never know the power of our true identity. But by coming to know the power of our true identity, we come to know something about ourselves that is complete, timeless, non-dimensional, and beyond description. So it's free of all descriptions. It doesn't need to be nobody. It doesn't need to be somebody. It's free of those extremes. It doesn't need to take up a position of no self. It doesn't need to take up a position of a self. It's free of all extremes. It's free of all descriptive renderings. So in the Great Freedom Teaching, we use extremely powerful metaphors to communicate this instinctive realization. It cannot be communicated with ordinary language. It can only be communicated with powerful descriptive metaphors. And we don't use human-made metaphors. We use the metaphors of nature itself. By saying things like, point of view is like infinite sky. Our mind itself is like infinite, pure, flawless sky. Just like pure, flawless sky has never been made into anything other than sky, so we have never been made into anything other than the basic space of awareness. Our space of awareness itself is inseparable from the nature of reality, and that is our real identity. And then we say that we use other metaphors, like point of view is inseparable from awareness in the same way that the color blue is inseparable from the sky. The two cannot be separated from each other. Now, to communicate with these kinds of metaphors is to communicate in a way that makes instinctive realization of the nature of our mind invincible and also unable to be ignored. We can no longer ignore it because these metaphors speak to who we really are. We always know who we really are. So when we hear these metaphors laid out and depicted, they have a very powerful effect on us. Most of us live our entire life without ever being exposed to metaphors like this in relation to our own nature. So for the first time we see a text that uses these metaphors or a video or a movie or whatever it is, to see these metaphors related to us and our own mind and our own body, that our body is like infinite space, that our mind is pure and infinite like the flawless sky, that even though clouds appear in the sky, they're nothing but the sky, and they never affect the clarity of the sky in any way. When we are introduced to these metaphors as relating to us, they affect us in a way that we can't deny. And they're an essential part of being able to rest as awareness. They're really an essential part of being able to rest as awareness. If we come into a room for the first time and we've never heard anything about awareness, and we hear someone say, your mind is like the sky, and then they point to the sky, and we look out at the sky, that has an effect on us that it's untold. It's untold. It's something unshakable. We can never shake ourselves of what's been imparted to us. We've just received an incredible communication that's unlike any other communication we've heard during our life. All during our life we hear, well, you're somebody. And not only that, you're an accumulation of your points of view. You are your history. And I'm going to hold you to being your history, and I'm going to hold myself to being my history. That's who I am. And so then all of a sudden we're hearing, you're not your history, but that's not even said. It's implicit in what's being said. What we hear is, your mind is like infinite sky. Your body is like the vast expanse of space. And so you see, we are given our original identity in a sense. That's what's transmitted to us, our original identity. It doesn't have to be hammered into us the way points of view have been hammered into us, because we already know what our instinctive identity is. We're given permission to identify with our instinctive identity when we hear these metaphors for the first time. They're extremely powerful, and like I said, they're inescapable and they're unshakable. Because from then on, we've heard something about ourselves that no one else has ever communicated to us before. And when we see the possibility of that in one other human, in other words, we hear one other human being talking that way and writing that way and communicating that way and being that way, then it gives us permission to be that way too and talk that way, think that way, see the world that way, be that way. That's just the way it is. Because somewhere within ourselves, even though we might consciously, that we may not consciously form it into words, we're knowing, I am a human being just like that person. And because I am a human being just like that person, then whatever their state of being is, whatever their state of consciousness is, then that's mine too. And so you see, this is, it's really, the communication is so powerful. We form our entire identity through the knowledge of our points of view. But once we enter into what you could call pure knowledge or perfect knowledge, the pure knowledge or perfect knowledge of who we really are, then that other knowledge is much easier for us to leave behind. Once we've been introduced to our own nature, then we don't really want to fiddle around that much with that other nature anymore, even though we might continue to enact it for a while. More and more, it'll disappear from sight as our reality, as our enacted reality or our embodied reality. We won't care about it anymore. Now, the importance of these mythic metaphors that I'm talking about, that are so unlike the mythic metaphors of the war of good versus evil, is that they change people forever. Whereas the mythic metaphors of good versus evil portray the unreachable, untouchable hero, the mythic metaphors that communicate the nature of our own being exalt us. They make a hero out of everyone. They do not create an untouchable, unreachable hero. They evoke and elicit the hero who is within everyone. And so you see, this is an entirely new era of myth-making and an entirely different kind of myth-making. Because people who leave the presence of this communication, whether they've read it in a book or received it in a teaching or they see it in a film, they are changed forever. They're changed absolutely forever. And they're not emotionally ripped off, so to speak. They're not placed into a heightened state of emotion and then they leave the setting, go off, and then they're gradually deflated back to their balloon that's been popped. That isn't the way it is. Because you see, in these mythic metaphors, there's nothing to deflate or pop. The vast expanse of space is, it's immutable, it's unchanging. Sky can never be changed. There's no power that can be changed, that can change sky. The flawlessness of infinite space can never be collapsed into anything. And if we look at anything, no matter what it is, we see that it's only made of space. And today we can actually measure this with different instruments we've made. So you see, we always within ourselves as human beings, we really want to know who we are. And we might even create something like the Hadron Particle Collider or another linear accelerator or something like that. But everything we put in it, we're trying to find out what the behaviors and properties are of the things we put in it. But what we end up seeing is space. So there isn't anything now. scientists are just listening. Oh, don't we hear something? I think there's something in there other than space, but we can't really name it because we can't see it. We can't really prove it's there. So, well, there's nothing there but space because everything's made of space. Everything is comprised of space. And what seems to be always moving and changing is inseparable from what never moves. And because it's inseparable from what never moves, what seems to be moving and changing never really moves or changes. But you see, we cannot wrap our dualistic ways of perceiving things, in other words, our thinking and emoting around these concepts. It's absolutely impossible. The only way we can capture the throne, so to speak, is through short moments repeated many times. The importance of this teaching is that it's something anyone can do. There's no one on earth who doesn't have the equal opportunity to take short moments repeated many times. Also, it's something that it's not a commodity. So it's not something that needs to be sold or given or confirmed for anyone. It's something that once someone hears about it, it's up to them. It's up to them to capture the throne on their own. So they become the hero. They become the hero. And then in each perception, this whole world that has been seen as in the paradigm of good versus evil, with each perception, a good one comes up, then a negative one comes up, or a neutral one comes up. But what is the response? The response is the throne of awareness. That's what the response is, no matter what comes up. And in this way, we show ourselves that awareness pervades everything, that the whole magical display of good and evil is only one way of looking at things. However, within us, we have a way of looking at things that is completely beyond good and evil, that doesn't need to constantly be trying to force itself into some kind of good positioning in order to prove it's good. It's already all good. It's already all good and wholly positive. And within it, this magical display of good versus evil still appears. So you see, the only way we show that we have mastery over this whole mythic epic of good versus evil is through our own perceptions within ourselves that we have deemed good and evil. It's just like we've taken our magic wand of perception and we've said good perception, bad perception, neutral perception. And we've told ourselves that in order to be a good person, we have to have good perceptions. So we have to constantly be herding our identity into good perceptions, good emotions, good thoughts. And we don't even know there's another way to exist. Now, that kind of lifestyle is very exhausting. Very exhausting. You grow old fast. And by the time you grow old, you can't wait to die because it's such an effort. Somewhere within you, you cannot wait to die because even though we have more energy when we were young, when we get old, we still have all these negative thoughts, negative emotions. No matter how much we've tried to win the war against them, we still have them. They haven't gone anywhere and they won't. And not only that, added to it, our thoughts might become more negative and our emotions may become more negative and our sensations will definitely become more negative. As the body breaks down, we'll have aches and pains and all that will compel our attention. And so it can be very, very difficult and hard. And if we perceive things that way. Now, our true nature is always optimally energized, no matter what's going on, whether we're a newborn or we're on our deathbed or living life, our true nature is optimally energized at all times. And so when we rely on those short moments of rest repeated many times, what we're doing is tapping into an infinite source of energy, an infinite source of energy that is beyond the whole duality of good versus evil. We enter into a realm of natural perfection in which everything is perfect. The good perceptions, the bad perceptions, the neutral perceptions. We don't need the points of view to inform who we are or what we do. We don't need to decide this is good and this is bad in order to be a powerful actor in life. We don't need that at all. And how do we learn that? Short moments, many times. That's the only way we learn that. We stand tall and courageous in short moments many times rather than in our cockamamie descriptions of good versus evil. And as we do, we become empowered in a new way. We become empowered in a way that has been the province of very few human beings but will be the province of more and more. We come into the most powerful way of being human. And as it is our natural state and is already present, of course access to it has to be easy. It couldn't be some kind of Herculean, heroic battle that takes place in another galaxy. Far away, forbidding, and no place we'd ever want to live. And requiring big, strong men to get us out.
I can get a deal on lightsabers. 30% off.
Pretty soon you won't be able to sell those lightsabers. The lightsaber. See, all these things are metaphors for our own power. And the lightsaber, it is a short moment. That's what the lightsaber is. So you see, the lightsaber is something we don't have to buy. That lightsaber is what cuts a swath through all of what we have perceived as reality. It cuts a complete swath through that. It shows us that that entire reality that we perceive, it is just like a film. A film is made up of still images. And every single moment of now is just a still image of pure presence that's resolving into another still image of pure presence and another still image of pure presence, and this simultaneous resolution is unstoppable. It cannot be stopped. It cannot be captured into an identity or a reality. When we allow ourselves to see things as they actually are, then it makes all of this a lot more enjoyable. A lot more enjoyable, and we feel a lot more empowered in terms of living our actual life because we're not at the whim any longer of our perceptions. We're not at the whim of our thoughts, our emotions, our sensations. We're not even at the whim of our birth, life, or death. And this we realize through short moments many times. Whereas we thought we were limited by birth, life, and death, we come to see that we really are the all of all. We really are the all of all. That's just the way it is. And that can never be taken away from us. What we perceive is actually an indivisible reality that is completely open like the vast sky. And it is naturally present. That complete openness and spaciousness and indivisibility is naturally present, and it is indescribable. It cannot ever be significantly captured in words. It can be pointed to with words, but it can't be captured definitively. And so the people who can speak this language and write about it and create films about it are really the most important people in society, because they show us a way of being that has been hidden from view. And they not only show us a way of being that has been hidden from view, they introduce us to that way of being. And they provide all the skillful means and tools for us to gain complete confidence in that way of being. When something hasn't been obvious, repetition is a very skillful tool to reinforce its obviousness. So there are endless ways of describing, depicting, portraying what is evident right here.